This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. It's been hot and it's been dry throughout the region in recent weeks, just as it's been in much of the country. So it's no surprise that the La Crosse area joins much of the rest of the country in feeling some level of drought. In fact, about 80% of the country is experiencing drought conditions this summer. That's the largest drought the United States has experienced in some 60 years. According to an update today from the U.S. Drought Monitor, produced by the National Drought Mitigation Center in Lincoln, Nebraska, most of southern Wisconsin, including parts of Grant and Richland County, are considered to be in extreme drought. All of Crawford County, most of Vernon, and parts of Grant, Richland, and Juneau counties in Wisconsin, as well as Winneshiek and Allamaquis counties in Iowa, and parts of Fillmore and Houston counties in Minnesota, are all considered to be in severe drought. La Crosse, Monroe, and parts of Jackson and Trempealeau counties in Wisconsin, as well as parts of Fillmore, Houston, and Winona counties in Minnesota, are considered to be in a moderate drought. And conditions to the north range from abnormally dry to normal. Not surprisingly, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker on Wednesday declared a drought emergency for the entire state. And while there's growing concerns for yards, gardens, trees, and even groundwater, much of the impact is on agriculture. La Crosse County UW Extension Agricultural Agent Steve Hunziker explained to WPR's Steve Rysom what the drought conditions could mean for the ag community.
I think once we got into the hot and humid pattern, we started to realize that it's going to take some kind of storm to come in to really break us and get it into a pattern with it. To say we could see it coming prior to that, probably not. I mean, when we looked at our spring, all indications, yeah, we had a little bit warmer normal March, but we got some moisture again in April, or May really didn't turn out too bad. And the first part of June actually gave us some moisture, and that's kind of when things started to dry up. So a little bit different than maybe some of those that we saw in the past, whether we looked at the 88 drought or farther back to, like you said, to the 50s.
What is a drought by definition?
I'm sure there's a Webster definition or a technical definition of where drought is, but I think when we look at it from the agronomic side or even from a rural landscape side, we get into that drought situation when really the plants start to shut down or go backwards in their growing condition, and that's what we're seeing now, whether it be the corn plants that are starting to dry leaves from the bottom up to protect themselves, to some of our tree species that are just shedding green leaves because they can't support that mass of leaf that's there. So to give a technical definition of it might be a little difficult, but it's really when that moisture becomes to a point where we don't have things actively growing anymore and we're starting to see it decline during a normal time that we would see active growth.
What are the crops looking like around here? I know that corn is the one to watch at this point due to pollination, if you want to explain that a bit.
Sure. And soybeans would be your other ones, Steve, that we're looking at, from a standpoint of pollination. The corn stalk right now, going back to that initially, we're getting tasseling occurring on the top of the plant, which is a pollen source for that silk where the ear is starting to form and grow. And so it's a critical time for us to have some moisture to help with that pollination of moving those pollen spores from the tassels to the silk so that we get an ear to start to develop. As far as the stages of what corn looks like across the county and in the area, it's really a mixed bag. We have anywhere from corn that looks green and fairly lush, standing fairly tall, starting to get to that pollination or working through that pollination stage, to other corn that's very short, probably less than knee high in height, maybe a little taller, and really turning brown to almost a death look to those plants as the leaves continue to roll and dry, even to the stem itself, whereas some of the tops of these plants are starting to just wilt over because there's not enough moisture there to continue to support them. So a lot of it dependent upon the soil types that people are producing in. The very sandy, dry soils are lacking moisture the worst, obviously, and you get into some of the heavier soils, we may have enough moisture there deeper in the soil where that corn plant is able to tap into. The other point that seems to be somewhat of a trend is some of the earlier planted corn canopied a little earlier, maybe gave us some chance for some soil moisture still to be there. Some of the later, smaller corn that got in probably is struggling a little bit more at this point. So the other side is the soybean side. We see a peak time of flowering going to start to occur for most of our soybean crop as well. a mixed bag. We have plants that are very small, doing no flowering at all, to plants that are flowering, but it's going to be yet to be seen whether the pods fill on those plants due to lack of moisture at this point.
How can you tell when the crops look, well, endangered, if you will? I mean, I've noticed some crops, they're short, some crops, it's the roots, or is there a way to go by and go, that's a really tough-looking field?
I don't think you can necessarily just drive by and say that field's in jeopardy versus not. It's really getting out and taking time to assess that crop and walk through that field, cut some plants, see what the inside of that plant actually looks like. A lot of the corn plants in the area are still trying to survive and have some moisture in the centers of those unless they're in real dire straits or very small. So just the appearance of some of the leaves browning doesn't necessarily tell us the whole story. So getting out there and looking at those plants is going to give us a better analysis of whether they're still continuing to try to grow or if they're really starting to shut down.
And getting back to corn and soybeans, wasn't this year supposed to be a really, really good year? A lot of extra acres, planted corn, planted soybeans, and now we're contending with a doozy of a complication.
It is, and you're exactly right, Steve, with the standpoint of there was a high crop put in as far as number of acres for corn especially. We saw a lot of it across the Midwest and really the whole entire Midwest right now. And there are pockets that have received rain, of course, and look pretty good. But as a whole, there are areas that are looking pretty poor, and that's led to decreases in the number from USDA as far as yields potential that's out there and actual bushels that may come in. So if the trend continues, we'll tend to see that same trend from them as far as predictions of yields in the end.
I was going to say they recently dropped expected yields by, what, about 20 per acre?
Yeah, I think about like that much. I think one of the numbers that I saw was, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10% reduction in yield across the grain belt, as we would refer to the Midwest. So that's probably going to get higher and higher, too, as we get or have this prolonged dry conditions.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Steve Rysom. And our guest today is Steve Hunziker. He's UW Extension Agriculture Agent for La Crosse County, among other things. We'll go into horticulture here in a little bit. Do we have a lot of farmers with irrigation systems out there? They'll be able to keep those crops going?
There are a few in the county, but really not a substantial number that we see a lot of irrigation going on. Probably as we look to the central sands in the state of Wisconsin, a few other places may have more irrigation that they're able to keep some of those crop going, especially a lot of the vegetable producers, whether it be sweet corn or potatoes or some of those crops. Probably have more irrigation systems than we see here locally. So there is some of it going on, and certainly they're using them where they're available. But for the rest, and probably the majority in this area, they're waiting for a rain to come in.
If we keep going several more weeks and there's no significant change in the weather, any way to weigh potential financial impact on farmers?
Really tough to say for sure because of the varying stages of what crops are in and what they're doing with that crop. If they're able to feed animals with some of that crop that's out there, it certainly is going to give them a benefit versus a farmer who may have no feed source to give it to as far as animals are concerned. And, you know, we're looking for that grain to come out of that crop. So really going to depend on each individual situation, what their fields look like. And, you know, some places, if we can get a timely rain right now, it would really make a difference. We're still in a stage where we can see that. It is July. You know, a lot of the information coming out from some of the corn specialists and soybean specialists is, you know, we're at a critical time, but it's a point where if we do see moisture, we still have potential to get some yields out there. And so, you know, it's not completely gloom and doom at this point. I think there's some hope that some of this stuff is going to turn around and produce a crop.
This won't be the Dust Bowl.
You know, that's yet to be predicted, you know, but hopefully not. Then we get to that point.
John Steinbeck, yeah. Territory there. Has there been a temptation by some farmers that you've spoken with to just go ahead and chop those cornfields, make them into silage, if you will? And could you explain, just for listeners, the difference between silage and just straight on grain feed?
Right. The corn silage, we're harvesting the whole plant, and we're really looking for that as a feed source to our livestock many times. Not that we don't use the grain that way, too, but with the grain harvest, we're really just harvesting that ear, that bean pod that we're going to market out from it. So, yeah, there's been temptation, especially across the southern part of the state of Wisconsin. There are producers that have gone out and done some chopping. I think the biggest thing to consider with that is really getting a sample or a test done on that corn to figure out, A, where the moisture level is, B, where is our nitrate levels in that corn, to make sure that we're putting up a quality feed that we can actually use and not end up spending all our time trying to harvest this crop and then turn out with a feed that's really not usable. So you're going to want to do some testing with that ahead of time. And the other thing is a lot of our crop's insured. And so if you are going to be considering harvesting that crop early, you really need to be in contact, if you have insurance on that, with those adjusters and with those agencies to make sure that you're not null and voiding that contract that you have with them if there is a prolonged drought or the situation worsens. So you want to make sure that you're taking care of business up front and not just reacting necessarily to what we might be seeing out in the field.
Taking you a little bit off the farm just a bit, will consumers see a reflection in price? I've read it maybe not any sooner than next year, but there might be a noticeable change in some items.
Yeah, it really will depend on what the outcome eventually is here at the end of the season, and it's probably not going to be a direct effect immediately. It's going to be a longer term effect that we might see. And different markets hinge on, those growing crops. So depending on what happens with the corn crop or the soybean crop will depend on, the animal markets and what feed's available to feed these animals. And so they're all connected and they're all together. So, what it ends up for the consumer in the end is yet to be seen. But certainly if harvests come in lower and things don't turn out as projected, there's potential for increases.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Steve Rysom. Our guest today is Stephen Hunziker, UW Extension Agriculture Agent for La Crosse County. And you're not just an ag agent, you're also La Crosse County's Extension Horticulture Agent. And are you hearing from a lot of gardeners?
Well, from some standpoints, when we talk about it, some of the big things are probably some of the insect pests that we started to see, the Japanese beetle, for example, earwigs, the cicada killer wasp is around pretty heavy this year. So some of that end of it that we may not normally focus on as much, but they're the main things that are out there right now to see. But also, the vegetable gardens, some of the questions about what's happening with production on some of the plants that maybe aren't getting the moisture that they need right now. And there are some turf questions, although a lot of the turf has pretty much gone dormant or dry unless we're supplemental watering at this point.
How much rain does La Crosse County need to get back to normal? Or is normal, begs the question, what's normal? But it is normal, a full recovery, that's out of the question at this point, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, right now we're just looking for any kind of moisture to get things started. And so, it's really hard to say, we need 10 days, we need 2 weeks, we need 3 days to get that moisture levels back up. But I think it's going to take us a substantial series of rain events to get us back into conditions that we would have normally, as you quoted, see. It would just be nice to see a 2-3 day stretch where we saw some nice showers come in and really start to loosen up that surface. It's extremely hard out in many of the fields, and so it's going to take some time to loosen that topsoil, really get us back into absorbing that moisture back into our subsoil where we're going to need it again and replenish that. So anywhere from days to you could be looking at weeks of moisture recovery to get back into condition.
Is it possible to lose an entire crop to the drought? Or is it with the burning going on and stuff, there will probably be at least something at the end for them to harvest if worse comes to worse and the drought continues for weeks and weeks?
Yeah, it's really going to depend on the soils that they're on, the condition of their corn or their soybean crop or whichever crop that we're talking about right now. A lot of producers that are feeding animals usually have that hay crop that's part of it as well or alfalfa crop. And we did see some yields come off alfalfa early in the season. Our first cuttings were fairly substantial. We've seen a decline in that, of course, without some moisture from then on. But, you know, hopefully nobody's going to get skunked when it comes down to, you know, bringing in a crop. I think that would probably be the worst scenario possible, especially for a producer that's trying to feed animals. And you know, the relief will hopefully come to give us a chance for this crop to come off and be harvested at least at some yield point. And I would say for the most part, as we look around, we're still in that opportunity window to get yields and still have that crop that's out there, especially in this area. It's just a guess as to what's going to happen next to get that in. And it's important to be patient with it. It's really hard. I know for a lot of farmers that I've spoken with to stand there and watch that crop continue to decline in the field. But we are at a point where we need to determine, is it going to pollinate? Are we going to start to see the beans fill out in that soybean crop or the corn ear start to develop? And if that happens, you know, there might be reduced yields, but hopefully something that we can take off.
I know Extension has quite a bit of information, drought-related and stuff, for agriculture and for horticulture, if you will. And where do we go?
Well, you can go a number of different ways. The Ag Department through UW Extension has put down a drought response website. It's an FYI site that you can access through UW Extension off your local county site, off the La Crosse County site. A number of resources are posted there. It would be at lacrosse.uwex.edu is our local site here in this area. You can go on under the agriculture tab or horticulture tab and check out some of the what's new topics that are there. We continue to update. Different specialists have put out information on the varying stages of where we're at and what to anticipate as we move forward with the crop and some things to consider, you know, as you go into those potential earlier harvests than we would normally see.
How's morale out there?
Well, I think
there's worry, obviously.
Yeah, there's worry and concern very much, you know, as you stand and watch that crop that you put a lot of time and effort and financial backing into continue to struggle. And so I think there's plenty of concern. You know, there's anxiety to try to, what do I do? How do I help this situation? You know, what are my best options going to be for it? And so I think, you know, farmers are hanging in there the best they can at this point and really hoping that we can get some moisture in and things will turn out at least decent in the end.
Steve Hunziker is the agricultural agent for UW Extension in La Crosse County. He spoke with WPR's Steve Rysom. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. While farmers in general are understandably concerned about the long-term impact of drought on their commodities, organic farmers may have a slight advantage in toughing it out. That according to Harriet Behar, an organic specialist for Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Services, or MOSES. She shared her observations on how organic farmers are holding up with Steve Rysom.
Well, we are, you know, having some problems, just like the conventional. Our feed costs are higher, you know, every day, it seems like, with the drought. But, you know, organic farms really feed a high forage diet. So the loss of some corn is not as big of a deal. It is a problem when the pastures start to dry up, but most of the organic farmers, you know, plan for a lot of grazing. So they've got quite a bit of pasture, and they've been trying to manage that with rotational grazing. So far, I've heard people have been able to kind of stick it out. A few people have started doing a little bit of supplemental feeding of hay. But the other side of, besides the production side, is the demand side is really growing. So we really need more producers to go organic in the dairy world, as well as more farmers to grow livestock feed for them, including small grains like barley and oats and wheat, and as well as hay and even silage crops.
So it sounds like it would be nice, given the current drought and the conditions and such, that it would have been nice to have a lot more dairy producers now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then the growth of the organic industry at the consumer level, I mean, we're back up into the middle to high teens, so somewhere 15% to 18% this year. I mean, during, you know, the previous years, I think the lowest we went was a growth of 8% to 9%. But over an average over the past 20 years, I think organic has averaged, you know, anywhere 14 to 16% growth every year. And we're still experiencing that. So there's a lot of consumers who are out there looking for organic products, and we sure would like to give it to them.
How's the drought doing with cattle output? Are we seeing less milk?
We are seeing milk drop a little bit, but again, because we are very much a forage-based, organic dairy producers don't push their cattle as hard. So it is not as, you know, they kind of are maintain a little bit more of an equilibrium. So there has been a little bit of a loss, but I would say not as much because they're not really on a feed ration. You know, they're out there grazing. And so it's a little, so they still can graze in the morning and the evening just as they would and then chew their cud in midday. But, you know, it's kind of hard on everybody, this heat.
The organic industry seems to be very community-based. I mean, you know the other farmers. And I am wondering, when it comes to when a farmer, A, needs more feed to feed their cattle, forage and such, is it easier? Is it that sense of community that perhaps makes it easier to get help from Farmer B?
Yes, it is. And actually, many organic dairy farmers work with farmers right in their neighborhoods, and actually all of them work together on their rotations. And so if there's a farmer, let's say, that maybe only has maybe, you know, 40 or 60 acres and there's an organic dairy farmer down the road, maybe that 60 acres one year would be hay, and the next year it would be corn silage, and then the following year it would be small grain, and that would be something that the organic dairy farmer would kind of work into his rotation. And so that helps the farmer down the road basically sell everything over, you know, a period of 5 years, their full rotation, as well as helping the dairy farmer make sure that he's got enough of all the different feedstuffs that he needs to feed his cattle. It's quite expensive to have enough land to, you know, feed a herd of 100 cattle, plus all the young stock. And a lot of times that's a lot of work for one person. So they work like in a community. And then part of organic is having a good crop rotation, one that doesn't only have row crops in it. So this way the farmer down the road has a market for that hay and small grains that they're also growing in addition to the corn and maybe beans that they might grow in rotation.
With the drought situation we've had for several weeks, have you noticed much culling of herds, if you will, winnowing them out a bit?
I guess I have not seen that. Again, organic dairy farmers don't tend to push their animals quite as much, and they're really based a lot in the forage-based diet. So there's been some supplemental feeding, mostly of hay. There may be a little bit of small grains, and that has not really been that difficult. But I think if you have a herd that's used to, you know, a high-protein diet with a lot of corn in it, which most organic dairy farmers don't do, on the conventional side, that can be pretty hard on the animals when that corn gets very expensive. And if the farmer wants to cut back on that expensive feed, then the animals would have a harder time. So, for instance, like the rolling herd average on an organic dairy farm is somewhere between 14,000 and 16,000 pounds. And, you know, maybe they're dropping 500 pounds or something like that. It's not really a lot. The heat is hard on them, and, you know, making sure they can get enough water in them to make up for the high temperatures, that's probably hurting them more than the feed side.
If the drought lasts, say, another month, what decisions will organic dairy farmers have to face?
Well, it really would be what they're going to feed for their winter rations. You know, how much corn and beans are they going to have? And so we might see more of a drop in milk production next winter, when there's not going to be as much supplemental grain because they can't be out on pastures at that point. And of course, at an economic side, right now the price of organic corn is $12, $13 a bushel. And even if the organic dairy farmer is making, you know, $32 a hundredweight and they're not even feeding that much of it, it's still a good chunk of money out of the input side. So that's really the pressure. But it's mostly felt by the producers that are buying in grain. Those that are self-sufficient. But of course, those would be those on, really on the smaller side that could afford to grow all their own feed grains on their farms and don't have that many animals. And there's less and less. And most of the people do buy in some grains because they prefer to be managing their pastures rather than going out there and cultivating corn or beans.
Would there be a point months down the line, perhaps into next year, where if the drought goes too long and the dairy prices reflect that, that consumers will see a change in price at the local co-op?
I know that the farmers would like to see the price go up a little bit to them. So it really would be up to the dairy processors, you know, if they will absorb that, you know, that price and give their dairy farmers some more money to cover some of those feed costs, or if they would pass it on to the consumer. It's really, really hard to know. But really, the function is supply and demand. And right now, we don't have enough supply of organic milk. And so that probably would drive up the price as well, because we really need more organic dairy farmers to be producing organic milk to meet consumer demand here in the United States.
So the moral of the story is that the organic dairy industry is doing okay during the drought?
Well, they're optimistic. I would say, you know, they're suffering too. I mean, the price of feed grains is going up, and, you know, it is hard on the animals, you know, trying to keep them comfortable in this heat. And of course, we're having some issues with the pastures, you know, starting to dry up. But we're all hoping we're going to get some rain and come out of this. But I would say that the organic system that's in place has maybe a little bit more reserves and resiliency than a conventional system, just because, you know, we're so tied to having a high forage diet to begin with. So we're not quite as tied to the expensive grains from the majority of the ration as conventional would be.
Harriet Behar is an organic specialist with Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Services, or MOSES. She spoke with Wisconsin Public Radio's Steve Rysom. While there are various opinions on whether the extreme heat and drought are related to long-term climate change, it's not surprising to hear speculation. Coming up next, perspectives on climate change and more from one noted explorer, Will Steger. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm John Gatto. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse.